raised in the Catholic tradition, did all the sacraments. I was an altar boy, you know, I sang in the choir, I played trumpet on Christmas and Easter. I was really into it. And it wasn't until college that I actually began looking at my own spiritual journey, what I actually believed. I mean, I'd feel like I'd served my faith of my fathers well. I'd given it all I got, you know, but I was in college now. The Pope could not breach these hallowed walls of learning. I was free. I was free to not go to Mass if I wanted to. I was also free to look at the things about Catholicism and examine my beliefs about Catholicism, whether they resonated with me or not. And I also was free at that time to really look at my own spiritual path. And that led me down the road to a lot of Eastern philosophy. I was into Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism. Read books by some of the masters, Paramahansa Yogananda, Rajneesh. Basically, pretty much turning my back on Christianity and the Catholic faith. But what I didn't know then, that I know now, was that I was going through a process called deconstruction. Deconstruction. And this is a new term for me. I found it in a book that was recommended on the Progressive Christianity website, great website. To look at for articles and things like this. This book is called Christianity Without Dogma, A Personalized Way to Deconstruct Christian Beliefs and Practices by Jack Bergstrand. Now, you know, this is called Christianity Without Dogma. Well, my talk, Christianity Without Dogma? Is there such a thing? Well, we're about to find out, I guess. Wait, I'm going backwards. Let me get used to my knobs here. There we go. Wikipedia defines deconstruction this way: a phenomenon within the American evangelical movement where Christians rethink their faith and jettison previously held beliefs, sometimes to the point of no longer identifying as Christians. And that pretty much nailed where I was at the time. You know, I certainly didn't know a lot of Catholics who were deconstructing back then. But today, according to research by the Deconstruction Network, there are more the people who are leaving their traditional Christian religion to search for a more spiritual path is now the fastest growing segment of our spiritual segment in America. That's right. You've heard of them, right? The nuns. It turns out the non-affiliated. It turns out that 75% of those who identify as nuns, non-affiliated, are Christians who are deconstructing from their faith, and they just haven't found a place to go yet. Deconstruction has also been called de-churching, if you've heard that, de-churching. So there's a book out now called De-Churching, Who's Leaving, Why They Are Going, and What It Will Take to Bring Them Back, and it was written by two evangelical ministers. And listen to this staggering, listen to this staggering statistic. More people have left the church in the last 25 years than all the new people who became Christians during the First Great Awakening, the Second Great Awakening, and the Billy Graham Crusades put together, combined. More people have left Christianity in the last 25 years than who came to Christianity through the First, Second, and Billy Graham Crusades. Billy Graham came up during Ronald Reagan and basically defined Christianity for that time for us. Now, deconstruction isn't a bad thing. You know, this really puts into perspective the scope of what's going on in the evangelical movement, and it's also the churches are noticing. And they're starting to take action. Because deconstruction isn't a bad thing. In fact, Jesus himself could be accused of being a deconstructionist, right? He was always urging his followers to rethink their Jewish faith, to rethink past the laws, the letter of the laws, to rethink past the caste system that puts some people above the others. He said that the love fulfills the scriptures, not the letter of the law. And he also said, I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. And I always wondered about that scripture. Could it mean that he meant his sword was deconstructing the Jewish faith? It's possible. So chances are, okay, somehow, that you know a friend or a family member who's thinking about deconstructing their faith. And it doesn't have to be Christianity. You can be deconstructing any faith, Judaism or Hinduism, or is already deconstructing, and maybe they don't even know it, just like I was. And chances are, too, that unless you were born and raised in unity and you're here today, you're most likely deconstructing. Now, I have the honor of giving my Path to Discovery class, and I've experienced over the past 10 years, that's for new members, that the people that come through our doors and the people who want to become members have their own deconstruction story of why they're here, leaving their past, the religion of their fathers, and looking for a religion for their sons, and looking for a more spiritually based faith that gives them the freedom to think what they want to think on. So what I've said so far, I'm wondering, how many of you consider yourselves deconstructing Christians? Raise your hands. Wow. Wow. Look around. Welcome home. Welcome home, y'all. So why are Christians deconstructing? Why? So here's five reasons. The top five reasons Christians are deconstructing. Number five, hypocrisy. Younger believers especially, but others as well, are concerned about the unbiblical attitudes they see within their own corner of their churches, church culture. Misogyny, racism, political tribalism, lack of interest in social justice. And when they express these concerns or try to advocate for change within their church, they find that they're either ignored, rebuffed, or they're told, maybe you prefer a different kind of church. You know, church lady. Maybe you'd like to go somewhere else. So that's one reason. Number four, closed systems. Okay, so most Christian churches today are what social sciences would call a closed system. And that means that closed systems have little ability, if any, to change over centuries. And dogma is one of the reasons. It's the root of the stagnation, because evangelical leaders claim that their dogma comes from an unchangeable, unchanging, dogmatic God. And if with that claim, how can you change? They've painted themselves into a corner. And many Christians today, especially the younger generations, are finding it difficult to relate to first century dogmatic beliefs in the 21st century. Number three, I hesitated about this one, but it's in the book. Right-wing conservatism, I thought, basically right-wing conservatism is fueling the increasing momentum of the deconstruction movement. You see, when politics and religion team up, it quickly just becomes a business of exploiting its members for money, for power, and for votes, of course. And the most important thing is when politics and religion get mixed up, and we've seen this happen in the last 10 or 15 years, political values such as abortion, homophobia, anti-gay marriage, gender rights, even book burnings, they become labeled as Christian beliefs because they're so closely tied together. And this is the thing. Christianity is losing its moral compass as a result. You know, I'm a Christian. Does that mean I'm supposed to hate gay people? Or, you know, it's confusing for them, and it's causing them to look elsewhere. Number two, Bible inerrancy. This is believing that the Bible is the word of God. Every word is true. And, you can believe the Bible is 100% false, or you can believe it's 100% true. But 75% of us, from atheists to evangelicals, fall somewhere in the middle. They take what they want from the Bible, what resonates with them, and leave the rest. And this makes the Bible very difficult to defend. And a lot of Christians today are just basically avoiding the whole topic altogether. But then, the number one reason people are leaving, what? Drum roll, please. The title of this talk, it's about the subject of this talk, is dogma. Dogma is defined as a principle or set of principles laid down by an authority as incontrovertibly true. This is the problem with dogma, is that it's passed off as truth. Christian dogma relies a lot on the supernatural, unprovable, unverifiable beliefs. Original sin, right? What? Man calling one of God's creations sinful before it's even born? Who's ever heard of that? Vicarious atonement, virgin birth, parting the Red Sea, you know, calming the storm, talking snakes, burning bushes, all that stuff. All of these fundamental Christian, foundational Christian doctrines rely on a belief in the supernatural and in the magical abilities of the biblical figures. And they're laid down by an authority as incontrovertibly true. Dogma is also used to hurt people, abuse others, like the evangelical teachings around marriage and homosexuality, gender equality, and the superiority of Christianity over other religions. And another aspect of dogma is that it's dualistic in nature. You're either right or wrong. It's black or white. You know, you're either for us or against us kind of mentality with dogma. Oneness, unity, non-dualism is very difficult to achieve in these, you know, present church environments. And then people just don't know where to go after that. Now, the Fillmores, the Unity co-founder, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, were emphatically anti-dogmatic. They thought dogma would prevent unity from progressing and evolving. So they didn't have any, none. They didn't talk about the afterlife because it wasn't provable. They couldn't speak the truth about the afterlife because nobody knows. It wasn't until the mid-80s when Charles Fillmore's granddaughter, Connie Fillmore Bazzi, was finally pressured, mostly by churches in the field, to come up with what we know today as the five principles. And if you look at these five principles, there's nothing dogmatic in there. All of the five principles are provable and demonstrable. Charles Fillmore stated, this was his when someone asked him what unity was, "Unity is a link in the great educational movement inaugurated by Jesus Christ. Our objective is to discern the truth in Christianity and to prove it." See, I don't know about you, but that's what I'm seeking in my spiritual journey, the truth. Not an easy way to get to heaven when I die. So dogma in itself is not categorically wrong or stupid. It's not what I'm saying. No one can factually prove everything we believe, right? Our beliefs are complicated. But in ancient times, dogma helped to unify tribes around a common idea. But today's culture, it's really having the opposite effect, not unifying at all. So if you're new to deconstructing or you're de-churching, here are five steps that I found in the book that Bergstrom's laid out for his own deconstruction journey. And I found that these are really important for any of us, because no matter where you are in your spiritual journey, it's always good to take a look at what you believe at any time, because our beliefs, they're not anchors. They don't hold us. Our beliefs are like buoys. You can move with them. You can, you know, they change. You've seen throughout history how beliefs change over time. So the first step he recommends is that if you're deconstructing, first re-examine why you believe what you believe. Take a look at it. Doesn't matter how long you've been here or wherever you've been, it's always a great idea to look at what you believe, why you believe what you believe. If we cling to them, they can hold us back. And do you believe what you believe just because it was taught to you all your life? Or does it really resonate with you as true? Really look at some of the ancient dogmatic beliefs that rely on supernatural intervention. What good does it really do us, think about it, to believe that Moses actually parted the sea, okay, or that Jesus actually calmed the storm with his hand? Without the dogma around that, you're free to read those passages as a story of a man's faith and the beautiful, empowering message of Jesus in those stories. Step two, become friends with your conscious mind. We all know about our conscious mind. Our conscious mind is the mind that lives in the present moment. The conscious mind is fully engaged in what's going on around you. Your conscious mind is what observes your thoughts. It's the me that you say, when my thoughts, your conscious mind. And the conscious mind is not judgmental, it's non-dualistic, It's compassionate and forgiving because it doesn't bring anything from the past into the present moment. So get in touch with your conscious mind, and this is where you will truly benefit from a dedicated meditation practice in order to really feel the power of your conscious mind. So that's number three. Number three, integrate prayer and meditation. We love prayer and meditation here. Our second, our second or third principle says that prayer and meditation is a process that brings us closer, strengthens our connection to God. Once you've looked at what you believe, all right, once you look at what you believe and examine the language you use in your prayers, so you get established, this is what I believe. Now look at how you pray. Does your prayer language match your beliefs? This is very important in your prayers. And I realized that I was not praying according to what I believed. You know, if you don't believe God's a long-bearded man in the sky granting wishes to us, then don't pray, oh dear God, help me find a new job. You know, adjust your language to whatever you feel God is. Unity teaches the power of affirmative prayer. This is what's totally unique about Unity and New Thought. We use affirmative prayer, not a beseeching prayer. So if you're not familiar with affirmative prayer, I suggest you get the book, How to Pray Without Talking to God, by Reverend Linda Martella Whitsett. It's a beautiful book. It was life-changing for me, and it's available in our bookstore, How to Pray Without Talking to God, if you're not familiar with affirmative prayer and the power within that. And if you don't have a meditation practice now, I just really encourage you, 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes at night, try to work that up to 30 minutes if you can. Paul and I have been meditating now for about a year and a half, 2 years regularly, and it's so subtle. It's such a slow progression, but there is a progression, and it does work. You know, don't sit there expecting to get a revelation, but just watch your progress, watch your thoughts. After you've meditated for 3 or 4 weeks, look at what you're thinking about now, that kind of thing, and you'll definitely see progress. It's not quite as discouraging. Number four, create a Christian moral compass. Okay, we have to kind of redefine what Christianity is about. Like, what does it mean to act like a Christian nowadays? First, we have to replace the political views that are becoming entangled in Christian ethics and focus on Jesus's priorities. Jesus's priorities were love, service, and personal empowerment. Focus on that message. Love was his greatest commandment. Service, directly related to his efforts to feed the hungry and heal the sick, and in all his teachings, were meant to empower us to achieve the kind of spiritual status that he had. With love, service, and empowerment, these ideals, they're not constrained by dogma, right? And they also can be validated by direct experience. And number five, embracing life in the present moment. So we talked about that in the conscious mind. You've examined your beliefs, you become friends with your conscious mind, you've integrated prayer and meditation into your spiritual practice, and you've created the simple moral compass of love, service, and empowerment. And now we can take our attention off the 2,000-year-old dogma, release the fear of a fiery afterlife, and read the Bible as a book of incredible wisdom and culture, and see Jesus as a peer, not as a God. Embracing Christianity unencumbered by the shackles of the past, we can see that the heart of Christianity is not in the dogma, it's in the heart of Jesus' teachings, written on our hearts. Whoops, written on our hearts and minds. I forget I have a lava on, sorry. So everybody breathe. Yeah, I know, throwing a lot. Many of you have been attending Unity Renaissance for many, many years. Some of you were raised in Unity, and many of you, this is your first Unity church you've ever attended. But at some point in your spiritual journey, your desire for truth eventually superseded your fear of going to hell or leaving your religious comfort zone. And that's why you're here. This was me in my late 20s. I knew Catholicism had brought me as far as it could on my spiritual journey. So I was looking for a path that was positive, did not see me as a hopeless sinner that needed saving, practical, included practices I could use in my day-to-day life, like meditation, affirmation, prayers, and so on. Lots of classes here. And progressive. Unity is a dynamic and evolving system, not a static system. We evolve as our understanding of the divine evolves, and as science and biblical scholars unveil new information. And you can see this evolution in our language if you look back at some of our early books, how we approach the Bible, how we define God. There are songs on my earlier albums that I don't do anymore, that I wouldn't sing anymore, because they no longer align with what Unity is teaching now. You see, so I can look back and I can see how I have evolved with Unity and within Unity. It's a beautiful thing. I've been asked on several occasions if I was a Christian. And I'd already thought about the answer, and I'd thought about what I would say if somebody ever asked me. Unhesitantly, yes. To the best of my ability, I follow the teachings and example of Jesus of Nazareth. I strive to prove and demonstrate what he taught, and I believe that makes me a Christian. And taking into consideration that there are, listen to this, over 45,000 Christian denominations worldwide. Taking that into consideration, I think I fall into one of those. I'm one of those. You're one of those. You know? Say yes. I hate to be embarrassed to be able to say sometimes that I'm a Christian, and I'm going to own it. You know? So just as the Second Great Awakening, the Transcendentalist movement, that would open America up to intense national self-examination, right now the deconstruction movement is opening the evangelicals to rethink and re-examine their message in a more palatable way for a changing America. So it's a very good thing, and this change is coming from the grassroots congregants. Churches as a whole can deconstruct, and the power and the numbers of those deconstructing is going to help Christian fundamentalism shake off the shackles of dogma and bring the Christian faith alive in the 21st century. Jim Berklow, who writes for the Progressive Christianity website, wrote recently, I love this, "We are in a uniquely remarkable historical moment. We have the opportunity to redefine the dominant paradigm of Christianity in America. Let's take it and run." Hopefully within our lifetimes, we won't be hesitant to say we're Christians if we are. I'm going to close with this quote from a man named Jim Palmer. Jim Palmer is the founder of the Center for Non-Religious Spirituality. And I hope this is going to inspire you all to re-examine your current beliefs, maybe empower you to trust yourself and your own inner voice around your spiritual journey. So just take a moment, take a breath, and listen. You are capable of guiding your own spiritual path from the inside out and don't need to be told what to do. You naturally have the ability, capacity, tools, and skills to guide and direct your life meaningfully, ethically, and effectively. You have the choice to cultivate a spirituality that doesn't require you to be inadequate, powerless, weak, or lacking. You have the power to choose a spirituality that empowers you towards strength, vitality, wholeness, and the fulfillment of your highest potentialities and possibilities. So can there be Christianity without dogma? Look around. Look around. What do you think? Let's take just a few moments now in meditation. So close our eyes and know that when we close our eyes and take a breath and bring our attention into this moment, we're connecting to all of those around us, all those in this room. Our conscious minds are becoming one. As you take that breath in, picture it going into your heart, revitalizing, energizing your heart space. And as you exhale, feel yourself releasing any resistance to this process. And as we activate that heart space within us, and we go deeper into our true being, just let these words be your words now. I am capable of guiding my own inner path. I have the ability to direct my life meaningfully and ethically. I choose to cultivate spirituality that does not require me to be weak, powerless, or inadequate. I choose spirituality that inspires me, empowers me, and helps me fulfill my highest potential. Let's just take these statements into a few moments of silence together. I am the light of the world. You are the light of the world. I release the fear of punishment. I embrace the goodness of the universe. And I follow the teachings of our way shower, Jesus, to love more fully, to be of service into the world, to help those who are less fortunate, and to empower myself to do all the things Jesus did and more. For this we give thanks. So grateful for this beautiful life, for this beautiful consciousness, for this community, for the friends in our life who support us. We give thanks and say, and so it is. Let's say that together. And so it is. Amen.
Flow, Spirit, flow through me as I open up to be an expression of your unfolding peace. Show, Spirit, show through me as I open up to be an expression of your